A new study out of University College London's Institute of Healthy Aging suggests that parasitic worms could hold the key to living longer and free of chronic disease. Our own Madigan Institute's been doing its own research into human hookworms, and Dr. Tom Mules is joining us. Good morning, Tom.
Kia ora, Jim. Thanks for asking me to come on the show.
Kia ora. You've spoken to media before about what you're doing with hookworms at the Madigan Institute, and I'll ask about that. But the University College researchers in London reckon that the loss of parasitic worms inside us has so far been linked to a range of inflammatory diseases: asthma, inflammatory bowel disease, heart disease, multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, diabetes. Natural infection with hookworms may alleviate symptoms of multiple sclerosis and eczema. Now, of course, these are sensational claims because of the potential for restoring well-being and health. So can I ask you first, Tom, are they overblown or is that right, what they're saying?
Well, I think it's early days. There certainly isn't the evidence to say, yes, they can prevent ageing, they can prevent these diseases, but there's enough background information to suggest we need to do the research to say yes or no.
Countries with high rates of hookworm infections have low rates of autoimmune diseases. We know this to be true, and that's possibly causal, not just correlative.
Good question. All we can do is look at epidemiology, and that's where the idea of using hookworm to treat or prevent these illnesses came from. We've used animal models and now humans to look at exactly what the hookworm does to the immune system. It is looking like they change the immune system in the way we want it to treat these diseases.
And the worms suppress your immunity so they can survive in the body. That's what we think. And it's those parts of the immune system that can cause autoimmune conditions, Tom?
That's right. So the hookworm wants to live in your body so it can produce eggs and then, you know, produce offspring, essentially. So to do that, it starts secreting these really fascinating molecules into your bloodstream, which suppress parts of your immune system. And it just happens to be that those parts of the immune system are the same parts that cause these autoimmune conditions. So in a sense, it regulates the immune system so that it can survive. And so we're trying to harness that power to treat these diseases.
Just before I get to your study, just as a tangent, we've heard a lot over the years that we have too much hygiene in our lives when we're young. But New Zealand would never have been more worm-infested than we are. I mean, useful worms, I mean. We don't have the conditions, do we?
That's right. So in New Zealand, we don't have hookworm. And that's because for hookworm to infect other people, the eggs come out in infected people's stool and ends up in soil. Now, that soil needs to be warm, tropical-like soil so that those eggs can then develop into larvae. And then if someone is walking along in a field on the soil in there and their skin comes in contact with those larvae, then that person becomes infected. So we don't have those conditions in New Zealand. So you're right, it doesn't paint the whole story or paint the whole picture, because we've got very high rates of these autoimmune diseases in New Zealand, and so clearly it wasn't hookworm or loss of hookworm that is leading to these increased rates. So it's multifactorial, but it's just one of the possible factors.
Your healthy volunteer study, people without major health issues to whom you have added worms, how have you done that, please, and what do you want to know as a result of it?
Yeah, so that is almost coming to its completion. So what we really wanted to know was, could we, in the lab, get eggs and then grow them into larvae, which could then be used to infect other people? So that was the first reason for doing it, is developing that method. The second thing we wanted to do was make sure it's safe. Now, we're not the first group around the world to be infecting people with hookworm, and so we are pretty sure it's safe, but we really wanted to show that our worms were safe. And because that's the main thing you want to do before you start doing research on humans, and it is. And then the other thing that's really important from this hookworm study is getting into the nitty-gritty of the immune system, exactly what this worm does to the immune system, because we know it suppresses the parts of the immune system that cause these autoimmune diseases on a superficial level. But at the Maligan Institute, we've got the resources, the lab equipment to really get in depth into what's happening. And then finally, these healthy volunteers have actually become our donors for eggs. So they drop their stool off to the Maligan Institute, and we can use the eggs from their stool to then grow more hookworm to infect other people.
I know that we don't have the hookworms naturally in New Zealand, but the old friends hypothesis comes into play here still, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many bacteria organisms inside us. Actually identifying which organisms are part of the old friends hypothesis is very, very complex because they all interact together. So I'm sure that part of the reason we have more autoimmune inflammatory conditions and rates going up is, you know, the old friends hypothesis is certainly part of that.
And the old friends hypothesis, for people who haven't heard it, can you just briefly define it?
Sure. So, I mean, it comes under the umbrella term of the hygiene hypothesis, in that more infections means that our immune system becomes used to dealing with infections and stays regulated, doesn't get out of control. And so the old friends hypothesis is that we have bacteria and organisms living inside us that help to regulate our immune system. And actually, over time, as we've become more sanitized, some of those organisms, our friends, have disappeared. And that's led to our immune system becoming dysregulated.
And without those friends, as you call them, Tom, I mean, inflammatory bowel disease in New Zealand is set to double over the next 10 years, I was reading. And you've got to think why, and the answer may be that we don't have those friends.
That's right, that's right. It's amazing, you know, that statistic. But New Zealand has the third highest rate of inflammatory bowel disease in the world. The pathogenesis of inflammatory bowel disease is that your lining of your intestine becomes damaged. Organisms get into that bowel and set up a chronic inflammatory state. Of course, you need to have the genes that mean that that environment sets up this inflammatory state, but the reason it's increasing in prevalence is because of our environment. So whether that is getting rid of being more sanitized, getting rid of these old friends as such, or is it something to do with our diet, more preserved foods that's leading to damage to the bowel? You know, there's lots of different possible areas, but the one we're particularly interested in is this old friends hypothesis.
Dr. Tom Mules is with us from the Maligan Institute. I know I'm asking you to hypothesize as we go, but our lifespans have lengthened, but they seem to be plateauing. Inflammation is increasingly thought to be contributing to the major diseases of later life. It's possible we could achieve a breakthrough if we added worms, the right ones, to our ever more sophisticated medicines and medical treatments as well.
It's possible. It's possible. I mean, that sounds a little bit far-fetched at this stage, but you know, we're certainly doing the research to look into that. So this idea of inflammation, so inflammation leading to aging-related diseases such as cardiovascular disease or dementia, comes, you know, the inflammation isn't from, you know, infections where you're very symptomatic, very febrile, but it's just chronic low-grade inflammation. And that inflammation comes from microbial products, microbes that live in the bowel, producing these products which get into your bloodstream through a leaky bowel. So the leakier your intestine is, the more of these products that get in and set up this low-grade inflammation. And so some of the research we're doing is looking at exactly how hookworm impacts on your intestinal barrier, because this barrier is very, very complex. It's made up of microbes, made up of this mucus layer, made up of these cell layers. And so we're looking at all these individual components and how the hookworm impacts these to give us an overall picture about, you know, is it actually helping the intestinal barrier? Because if it is, well, that gives us a lot more confidence that we're doing a good thing here. You know, part of the real reason we like hookworm as a potential therapy is that it could potentially sit in your small intestine for 5 or 10 years, because that's the life cycle, and deliver its effects. And, you know, looking after patients with inflammatory bowel disease, one of the big issues we have is adherence to medication, because these people are needing to take medication every single day. So, you know, the people that enroll in my study, the people that I talk to, are really interested with the idea of it just sitting there and not having to take medication, not having to wake up in the morning, lean over to your cabinet and take a few pills, or before you go to bed, take a few pills, just letting the worm deliver its effect. So part of the desirable benefits of hookworm is that it can just sit there doing its thing.
We have Kiwis treating themselves now with imported worms, and one of them, Lynn Jolly, was in media saying she's had a dramatic reversal in the autoimmune disease symptoms that were ruining her life. What would be the dangers, though, in buying them and trying to get them through customs here?
So certainly there are some dangers, and we've heard these anecdotal stories from lots of people. And actually, you know, there's published articles on this hookworm underground, which is what you describe. And so you can buy them over the internet, but we do not encourage that for a couple of reasons. First of all, the research isn't there to say whether it works or not. You can't base medical care on anecdotes. You need good quality, randomized controlled trials, and that's what we are setting up. So we don't know if it works, and so I would never encourage my patients to do this. The second thing is that we don't know exactly what worms they are importing, what worms they are infecting themselves with. And there's a potential for them to get quite sick if they infect themselves with the wrong worm, whether that's dog hookworm or another type of worm. So I would say to people, let us do the research first. If they're very interested, they could contact us and see whether they can get involved in our research, but don't do that at the moment.
And the WHO, because I'm sure people are thinking of this as they listen, has big deworming programs around the world. I mean, the wrong worms you don't want inside you at all.
That's right, or too many worms. We are using a low-dose controlled hookworm infection to try and treat these illnesses. And the beauty about hookworm is that it doesn't breed in the body, it doesn't replicate in the body. It produces eggs, but it doesn't replicate. So whatever dose we give someone is the only dose they have. And so too many of these worms can make you sick, can make you malnourished. And so, you know, worldwide, in places where hookworm is endemic, there are issues with people getting side effects from hookworm.
I saw researchers at Duke University looking at the 6,000 or 7,000 people worldwide who are trying worm treatments themselves, and they surveyed 250 of them. They concluded that a wide range of inflammation-related diseases, including inflammatory bowel disease and allergies and autoimmunity, were being effectively treated. We can see the dangers you're outlining, but you're not as convinced as they are at Duke University.
It's observational data. It hasn't been compared to a placebo. Mm. And you could see that infecting yourself with hookworm could have a big placebo effect. And so you need large randomized controlled trials comparing it to a placebo or another treatment to see whether it is effective. So no, I don't think there is enough evidence out there. And, you know, as researchers, you need to be realistic that something might not work. All the background tells us it is going to work, but you need to stay realistic.
Understood. There'll be lots and lots of people dying to have it work. So the timeline for conclusions from your study, do you think?
Yeah, good question. So at the moment at the Maligan Institute, we're running what's called a feasibility study in ulcerative colitis, which is an inflammatory bowel disease. And that's because to prove one way or the other, you need a big national, even possibly international study. So we're just focusing on the Wellington region, Wellington Hutt region at this stage, before we think about taking it nationwide and possibly even including Australia. So it is going to be a few years away.
I want to ask you one last question, and again, it's pretty futuristic, but how long before, do you think, even if it is a certain amount of guesswork at this stage, how long before what you're doing in the lab finds its way into clinical practice? I mean, if all goes well, how long before the general practice doctor or nurse straps a worm to your forearm and begins a therapeutic journey for your health and a literal journey for the worm?
Good question. Years.
Years.
Years. And that's research takes time, and also changing public's perception of worms takes time as well. And there's so many things we need to work through before it gets into mainstream. We at the Mallagon are producing these larvae, but how do we actually reliably transport them around the country? How do we make sure when they get to another centre, they're viable, they're live, they are actually doing what we want them to do at sufficient numbers? So it is going to be a few years before we get there.
Exciting prospect though, Tom.
Very, very exciting. It's very, very exciting research to be involved in at the Mallagon Institute.
Yeah, I can imagine. And thank you for your time explaining it to us. That's Dr. Tom Mules from the Mallagon Institute. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for having me.